No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People Their Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shatter Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show, which will try to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. I hope my show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. And you should feel free to call in if you have questions at 888-627-6008. Tonight, we have a very special guest, Barbara Lang. Barbara is the managing and principal and CEO at Lang Strategies. She served as president and CEO of the DC Chamber of Commerce for 12 years and transformed the organization into one of the most powerful and respected business groups in the region through her aggressive leadership and key public policy business issues. She's also worked diligently on education and workforce development. She was chosen Washingtonian Magazine's 150 most powerful people in the Washington region twice. She sits on the Sibley Memorial Hospital Foundation and also is a friend of the National Zoo of Fonds. We want to welcome Barbara to the show. Thank you so much for being on, Barbara. It's great to hear your voice again. It's been a while.
Senator, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here today.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you. And, you know, Barbara, let's start with the 800-pound gorilla in the room. Everybody's talking about the fact that our city council sent up to Capitol Hill a criminal code, which for the first time in 31 years has been overturned by both houses of Congress and is likely to be signed into effect by the president, who said that he won't veto the bill. Now, my contention is that it was ill-conceived to send the bill up there in the first place. They should have known what was going to happen. How do you feel about all this?
Well, I happen to agree with you, and I've been tweeting a bit about it for the last 2 or 3 weeks. I was disheartened, I was disappointed, and I was embarrassed, quite frankly, by the actions that the D.C. Council took on this issue. Excuse me. A Stevie Wonder could have seen this coming. Mm-hmm. And the council has every right to pass laws that they think are in the best interest of the citizens of D.C., but we can't do this in a vacuum. Congress has oversight of everything that we do, and they know that. Yet they went ahead and did this as though they were tone deaf and as though we had the final say-so. Mm-hmm. And so I was just very upset by what happened. And it just looked like they were not even prepared for the backlash that they received. And the Republicans have been telegraphing for several years what they would do when they regained power again. So this should have been no surprise to anybody.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the horrible thing for us, for the people that work on statehood, is that we lost 64 Democrats in both mm-hmm. houses of Congress, most of whom were statehood supporters. They pushed Biden into a corner. I don't know right. what they expected. You're right. Not only have the Republicans been telegraphing what they would do for the past several years, they've also been attacking the Democrats on every level for being soft on crime, you know? And I don't know why it is, Barbara, but it seems that they seem to be so much better at coming up with the soundbite than the Democrats do, you know, and they've turned the bill into a bunch of sound bites. And you know, and the mayor stood up, you know, the mayor tried to veto it. The mayor tried to stop it from going up there that way. I don't know that it would have made a difference because, you know, I see them right now talking about amending the bill and still not understanding that it's not the bill itself, but the nature of the politics involved. They're never going to be able to modify the bill and send it up there and not have the same thing happen. I really don't get it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I was going to say, I completely agree. And this is where it's like we are not looking at the bigger picture. We put vulnerable Democrats on the Hill in purple states who have an election coming up in next year in a difficult position. So we not only did we not get the Republicans, and we knew we weren't going to get them, but we lost a number of Democrats. And then we put the president in this very difficult position, and he is a big supporter of statehood. Yeah. I said on Twitter that I think we've put statehood back several years, and a couple of people challenged me on that and said I had no idea what I was talking about. But if we didn't get statehood when we were in control of the House and the Senate and the White House, you know we're not going to get it now. It's like, I don't know what they were thinking on this. This was just a real faux pas on the entire council. And, well, as I recall, there were two votes against it, right? Was it Gray and White? I think
no,
voted
just
against
one. Only White in the final analysis. They overturned the veto with 11 of the 12 of them, but yeah, only White was the only one that said no. Yeah, so, and they did it like almost instantly, you know, they turned it. And unfortunately, Barbara, they're wrong and you're right, you know, that first of all, you know more about this issue than most of the activists out there. We've got activists out there attacking President Biden for not standing up for this. And all I can think to myself is, do these people think that President DeSantis or President Trump is going to get them statehood? No.
Right.
Right? So why are we attacking the guy that supports what we want to do? I mean, it's just crazy. And you know, this is my personal opinion, and you don't need to comment on it one way or the other, really. But I think Phil Mendelson was a good councilman. But I don't think he's got a leadership bone in his whole body. I don't think he's a leader. I mean, I don't know if you want to comment on that, but you know, this, I think, falls into a matter of leadership because you're absolutely right. They should know. You know, I've been trashed on the internet for calling these guys petulant children, but that's all I could think of. All I could think of was my teenagers stamping their little feet, telling me what they were going to do, you know, not understanding that they weren't in control, you know? I mean, that's the thing. It's funny. It struck me like my daughter slamming her fists on the table at 13 years old and declaring she was the only child in the world that didn't have a cell phone. Yeah, I said to my wife, I said, do you think she really believes that? Do you think she believes that all the children in China and India and Africa, everywhere, every child's got a cell phone but her? And my wife said, yes, she believes it. And I think the city council acted that way. I think they just said, well, this is what we want to do. This is what we want to do.
You know, the thing that I always tried to do when I was in the whole lobbying game headed the chamber is I try to play the long game here and look at things far out. What's the impact? What do we do? What if I do this, what will they do? How and play that all out. It just seems like the council didn't do any of that. that they were totally unprepared, and then they didn't have a communication strategy on how to defend it if they were going to go ahead and with it. And so I just think it was failure on all counts, and I'm just so disappointed at our representatives. You know, I think Phil is in a tough job. He's got at least half of the council that leans far more left than he does, and that's saying something. I used to tell him that when I was at the chamber, and so he's got a pretty tough job to try to manage them all, none of whom report to him. But it's a difficult thing in order to pull the disparate pieces together, and it takes a special skill to do that. You know, the very best person, and I put this on a national level, that was superb at this was Nancy Pelosi. She knew how to manage her caucus, and she knew how to count the votes. And we just don't seem to be able to do that well.
Yeah, absolutely she did. And you know what? I'm proud to say that when I worked for the Democratic National Committee, this is a true story, I stood in the chairman's office one day when he said to us in a meeting, we were having just a brief meeting, he said to me, I'm bringing this woman from California. She's going to be a co-chair at the DNC. Expect wonderful things from her. Her father was Mayor of Baltimore. Her name is Nancy Pelosi. And that was one of the great understatements of our time because she really did do amazing things when she came here. And I think the things you're talking about, Barbara, when you say you look at the long game and you look, what you're talking about is leadership. I mean, that's really what it takes. And you're right. They're back on their heels now. I saw a TV commercial today with Muriel, with Mayor Bowser and Phil talking about how they support statehood. It's the first statehood commercial I've seen in the 16 years that I've been here. And it really focused on the two of them getting together because they understand they're under attack. And you're right. This was just a failure, and we haven't even gotten on to when you talk about them, several members of the council being to the far left. They sent a bill up there that allows undocumented people in the District of Columbia to vote in local elections. Now, Congress hasn't moved on to that bill yet, but I think they'll have a field day.
They will, and they will disapprove it as well.
Yes.
You know that. That is a real, that's another one that it's not going to see the light of day. So why do we put ourselves through this kind of embarrassment and have us talked about on MSNBC and CNN and not in a very good way?
The mayor in the last election really did get front and center on CNN and MSNBC, really had made progress on the national level. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I've lost my thought. Go ahead.
Well, I'm just going to say, you know, I mean, this is it. And Charles Allen put that on the end of the bill. In other words, first of all, it was just for green card holders, and then he slapped this thing on, you know, after 2 years of these people saying that the election results in California and Arizona should be overturned because illegal immigrants voted in both those elections, which of course is not true, but they will have a field day with this once they get their hands on it. And that's not the only thing, you know. They want 16-year-olds to vote. We don't let 16-year-olds drive in the District of Columbia unless they have somebody else in the car with them. But we're going to let them vote. You know, it just gets some of the progressive agenda is just so far to the left. And, you know, I think that you have a good perspective on it because you represented business for so many years.
You know, you have to, 60, I think of a 16-year-old, and are they mature enough to go through the process of being able to vote in elections? You know, maybe there's a 16-year-old or two that is, but But right. for the most part, they don't have that maturity yet. And you're right, they can't drive in a car without an adult. They can't have alcohol. And all of those are in place for good reasons. It's because yeah. they're not mature enough yet to make the right decisions. And it's just, I just don't know why we continue to do this. It's like we're shooting ourselves in the foot. The Republicans have said that they're coming after D.C. and they're coming after, well, there won't be any statehood under them, but they're coming after home rule, certainly. And, yes. and they do this. They're going to use D.C. as a test case for the rest of the country to show that Democrats can't lead, particularly those led by minority, in the minority-run cities. And they do this because they can. They are in power. And our best bet is to work on the national agenda such that we change all of this nationally. And not continue to do stupid things, you know?
Well, you know, and it really gets to me that somebody like you who's been engaged gets all this. You get it all. And I don't understand why they didn't get it all, why they didn't understand. Yeah, we're the perfect whipping boy, aren't we? We're a minority. We're a minority city with a black mayor. We've never elected a Republican. We have no elected Republicans in the District of Columbia. We are the perfect whipping boy for these guys. And they will hold us up. And mm-hmm. I think that the commercial that I saw today with Phil and the mayor is that they realize, yeah, they're coming after home rule. They are coming
well,
after home rule.
And they have got to be together when we go to Capitol Hill. There cannot mm-hmm. be any daylight between mm-hmm. Muriel and Phil. Yeah. We've got to be united. It's fun. And I think next week Representative Comer has a hearing on the 29th, I guess it's week after next.
Yeah.
And he's invited the council, he's invited Phil, he's invited the police union, he is invited the CFO, I believe, did not invite the mayor, at least not yet, has not invited the chief of police, and the subjects are supposed to be public safety and rampant homelessness, like they care about homelessness in our city, the Republicans.
Right. Right.
Now, if you want to do something about any of those things, the mayor has to be there. The police chief, they're the ones that do the work. Phil is the legislative branch, and they make the laws, but they don't implement stuff. The police union is not the organization that is going to get stuff done, but the police chief will. And so it's just, they're like playing us off one against the other. And I don't know how, maybe if you saw that ad today, maybe they're starting to realize that that's what's happening, and they're going to do a divide and conquer here. And so they're going to have Phil come in and the police union come in and the CFO, they're going to talk about the budget stuff, I guess. And they're going to try to use that against the mayor and against the police chief. And
yeah.
So you can see, again, Stevie Wonder could see what's happening here, you know?
Exactly. And that's exactly the case. And that's the police union agrees with them on the crime bill, that it shouldn't have gone up there. The CFO has already confronted Phil on the fact that they don't have the $5 million for the free bus, for free buses, which I personally thought was a great idea, because wealthy people don't ride the bus, working people
right.
ride the bus, poor people
right.
ride the bus, and it would have been great to give free bus service, and I hope they can. But you know, they've only invited the critics and the people that they think are responsible for this stuff, and they're just going to have a field day with these guys. And
mm-hmm.
and one thing that I think you might understand better than they do, being a member of the business community that's had to work at both the national and local level, is that these guys are tough. I mean, Congress, you know, they're not, this isn't like going up a bunch against a bunch of DC activists. This is a bench about going up against some of the toughest, smartest, meanest people in Washington. So they're really going to get their comeuppance. And let me just throw this out there. If you want to start the Barbara Lange for mayor campaign or Barbara Lange for chairman of the city council, let me say that I would be the first contributor. But
thank you, but no thank you.
Yeah, no. Well, again, why? Because you're too smart to do something like that.
No, I never want to be an elected official, never have. And I enjoyed my 12-plus years at the chamber, and that's as close to the electeds as I want to be. And now I'm just getting old. I don't know that I want to work that hard anymore.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I can tell you from the very first day that I started in D.C. politics, you were very well respected. There was nobody in Washington, there may have been people that disagreed with you, but there was nobody that didn't respect you for what you did and how well you did it. So let's move on a little bit. What about business? What about business in a pandemic? I was just told the other day that there's hardly any vendors left in Union Station, that all these small businesses have been wiped out by the pandemic. You know, if you weren't part of a national chain, you know, especially in something like a restaurant where you know, the margins are very slim, you weren't able to stay in business. So what can we do in government to help bring those businesses back? Because small business is really the engine of American enterprise, is it not?
Oh, absolutely. And small businesses are the ones that hire our local residents. Yeah. So that's also very important to continue to chop at the high unemployment rate that has existed in the city, way above the national rate. You know, a couple of things, and you're right, the small businesses, even downtown is not, I have not been to Union Station in quite a while, but I look at some of the other areas, and up the Wisconsin Avenue and Upper Northwest, a lot of the small businesses that existed here are gone. They're just not there. Somebody else is in their place. And I go downtown periodically, and I see lots of the retail space is papered over, and people have restaurants, whether they were restaurants or small dress shops or whatever, are gone. They just could not survive. You know, one of the challenges that people around the country are having, businesses around, well, municipalities around the country is having, is getting people to come back to work in the offices. And that's the challenge that D.C. has. And I know the mayor has implored the president to mandate that government workers come back to work, and I hope she is successful at that, because that you've got to get people back down into the city, and rather than continue to work from home. And I know it's people like working from home. I don't think you can learn as much that way, because we had to do it during the pandemic, absolutely. But now that at least the major threat, the pandemic is still here, and we have to learn how to live with it. We should take the precautions. You know, I mask up when I'm in a store. I still do that. I'm very conscious about that. But I think that we still need to be with other people. And you learn, and your career progresses. If you're with other people, you learn. You can't Zoom coffee break when you meet somebody in the coffee room and you strike up a conversation and you talk about some business issues. Well, you can't do that via Zoom. And so I would hope that the president would heed our call and get the government workers back downtown and back into the city. And so that's one thing, because that you need those people, those as customers, to be able to support the restaurants, to support the small boutique shops and the other entities that are there. And that's what we're suffering from big time, is you don't have the downtown walkable traffic that we had prior to the pandemic. We're not the only city that is experiencing that, but we probably experience it a tad bit more because we have so much government workers that were in our city every day. So I think that's one thing that the council and the mayor should continue to push the federal government on, getting people back into their offices. And so that's one thing. The second thing, I'm not sure. I mean, there are obviously incentives that the city can offer to businesses. But the city is going to be struggling. I saw some data from the CFO's office on the budget. You know, we're used to having all these big budget surpluses, and now that's not the case because the real estate taxes are down because, you know, nobody's in the office and you don't have as much real estate development activity going on. And one of our big sources of revenue in D.C. was real estate tax.
Yeah.
And so that's down. So the landlords are also suffering. They're hurting. I serve on a publicly traded REIT board out of Atlanta. And, you know, all we do is office, high-end Class A office buildings. And we are mindful that 2023 and 2024 may be challenging because you've got, you know, 50 to 60% of your office space is occupied. You're not at the 80 to 90 to 100% in some categories. So that is a real challenge. And you're asking, what can the district do? Other than trying to get people back downtown, Michael, I'm not sure what else we can do, because anything else we can do is going to cost the city some money. And we're already hurting a bit because of the decline in tax revenue.
Well, and that's absolutely, you know, people that may not know Washington, our primary the industry in Washington is moving paper around and okay. having that. Those offices occupied. I have a law firm that I deal with, actually, that's down across the street from the White House that has maybe 100,000 square feet of space, which must cost them a fortune. And I just wonder, when I go into their offices, have they realized that they can keep half of their workforce still at home and save a lot of money on rent and taxes? Of course, that might behoove them, but it would hurt the city. You're absolutely right.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of that going on where large law firms and other businesses are giving back space.
Yeah.
And so that hurts the city big time. That hurts the city. So, I think the key answer is to getting people back downtown, back into the city. I think that is because that will increase our tax revenue. People will be going to restaurants and eating the good foods that we have and paying tax, and people will be staying in our hotels. I have not seen the latest numbers on tourism yet, but I thought that it was climbing back up. I don't think it's at pre-pandemic levels yet, but it is starting. People are coming back to the city. Tours are coming back in. Business travel, the people that come here to do government work and lobby the city, some of that is picking back up again. But we need all of that tax revenue to support the city and to do all the things that that we want to do for our citizens.
Well, and I guess we'll see. An indicator that might be coming up soon is the Cherry Blossom Festival, which is always a big draw in the district.
Right.
It's one of our biggest events, right? People that come to see the cherry blossoms and the Cherry Blossom Parade. I remember that one year when there was a freeze of government funds and they talked about canceling the Cherry Blossom Parade because the federal government wouldn't have had, it's on federal property, and they wouldn't have had the police available to monitor the situation. We got so many calls from people that were upset about that. It surprised me how popular that event was. So I guess we'll see in the near future with spring coming up how that does. Let me ask
the next couple of weeks. Yes, go ahead.
Well, one of the areas that you deal with, and this is something that's always troubled me, Barbara, I'm an orphan I was orphaned at the age of 15. I dropped out of high school. I was ready to give up on my life, and I had a badass sister who just kicked me in the gear and made me get back into school, and I got a master's degree. And, you know, it bothers me that our education system in the District of Columbia is not better. What can we do? You know, we spend more than $1 billion on education in D.C. And yet we have among the lowest SAT scores in America. We have a higher dropout rate. When I started in this job, 51% of the kids at Anacostia High School did not graduate on time. We are the most educated city in the world. There are more people in Washington, D.C. with graduate degrees per capita than any city on the face of the planet. And yet we've got that problem with dropouts and kids not getting a proper education. What do you think we need to do for education in D.C.?
You know, if I remember from my chamber days, we spent the highest amount per child than almost any other jurisdiction in the country. I don't know whether that number is still that high or not,
because
I'm not as close to it anymore. But I'll tell you what I see different here than I see in other jurisdictions. In other jurisdictions, the business community drives the education agenda and drives our students, drives the teachers, drives the school boards, and they are so engaged. They drive it. The difference here is people in the business community, most of them, their children don't go to our public schools.
Yeah.
So they're not as invested in the outcome of this of what goes on in education. And I'm not sure I know. I mean, we struggled with that when I was at the chamber. I dealt a lot with the superintendent and then chancellor. We did a lot of work around workforce development, and so trying to get the business community engaged and to care and to really have the expectations of what's being taught in the classrooms and the expectations of what we wanted our students to be able to come out of when they graduate. What do they come out with? And that has certainly, I think, one of the challenges. I think perhaps another challenge is the parental supervision as well. And we have, and some of this, much of this goes back to economics. And the challenges that we have so many students and their parents that are at the poverty level or living below the poverty level. And when you don't know where the next meal is coming from, the education doesn't become the top priority in some cases. And so I think the continued work on the making sure that we have economic prosperity as the mayor liked to say, in all eight wards, not just in wards 2 and 3 or 2, 3, and 4. And we've got to get that right as well. I mean, I think there have been some inroads, but certainly, and I've lived in Washington now for 34 years. And while I think things are a little better than it was when I came here 30-some years ago, we still have not made the progress yet around education. You know, my husband and I moved here, my daughter was in 11th grade, and we moved her because of jobs. but we moved a girl at the worst possible time in her tenure because you know how cliquish girls are.
Yeah.
And she had been in a private school in Atlanta. We were living in Atlanta. And we decided that we wanted her to have a public school education. And she went to Wilson, what was then Wilson High School. And my husband and I were there. And she was like a B student. She wasn't the A student. She wasn't the D or F student. But we were there at that school for something every week. But we had jobs that we could do that. And the principal at the time was Michael Durso. And I never will forget. And he, when she graduated, he said, well, Mr. and Mrs. Lang, we did it. We got her out of school. I know he was so tired of seeing my husband and I. But you think about that we could go to that school every week for whatever was going on and to make sure she was on the straight and narrow and that they were doing right by her. But you think about parents that don't have jobs like we had and could do that. And so what happens is the A students get a lot of recognition and the students that are failing and the F category get recognition too. But those in the middle kind of get lost if they don't have parents that are able to do what my husband and I did with our daughter. And so I think there's got to be some parental engagement as well. And how, you know, how do you do that if people are worried about the next meal or if crime is rampant in their neighborhoods? You know, what's going on? So we've got a lot of other social ills to try to combat while we do this too. I mean, and it's not one or the other. We have to be able to multitask and do several things at one time.
Well, nothing could be truer than that. You know, certainly all three of my children went to Wilson, and my son was dyslexic. They didn't know how to deal with it. He barely, you know, we were on top of them all the time. We got an individual learning plan and all this stuff, right? My son, who barely makes it out of Wilson High School, gets accepted to college in Oregon, in Washington State, and graduates in 4 years at the top of his class.
That's because of your involvement ensuring that he, you know?
And also as a kid, well, I got my first full-time job when I was 14 years old because my father abandoned our family. My mom was dying of cancer. But also one of the reasons I dropped out of high school was because when I was in the workforce, they treated me differently. They treated me – no, I was no longer always treated as a child. I was abused sometimes by the work environment. But mostly, I got kind of treated like an adult. I had a paycheck. I had a – so it's very – you know, it's very alluring to young people, too, to get out of that environment. And, yeah, right. No kid drops out of high school because he can't do the work. They drop out of high school for a ton of other reasons, and we have to be engaged.
Right.
So
I do think we have to, I haven't been close to it of late, but look at a more creative way for kids to learn.
Yes.
It may be the standard way that I learned when I was coming up just doesn't appeal anymore. It's not as attractive. So how do we make learning fun and where they are just chomping at the bit to get in school and to learn more and to read these books and whatever. And I think that becomes where there's some creativity has to be put in with the education system on how we teach our children. Because it may be that the old way is not the right way today with all the technology, all the things that are gone, all the things that they have to lure them out of the classroom. How do we reach young people such that they want to be there and they're just chomping at the bit to learn?
Well, yeah, and you know, when I went to school, this was probably true when you went to school too, but I never doubted when I was in college, for example, that when I graduated from college, I would get a good job. I wasn't sure what the job would be and what my path forward would be, but I never doubted that it would be there for me. Now kids, right, they even my kids, all three of my kids have college educations, and they're always saying, it doesn't work like that, Dad, anymore. I got my first job by looking in the, you know, out of college, by looking in the Washington Post. I answered an ad in the Washington Post. My kids laugh at that. They go, oh, Dad, doesn't work like that anymore. You know, so, yeah, as the business environment has changed, I'm not sure that our educational environment has changed to keep up with that. And we need to
I absolutely agree. And that's why I think the business community ought to be a lot more engaged. I mean, some of the teachers need to come and work in the business side.
Just
on the sabbatical a bit, such that they understand what the demands are and what we're looking for. Because what we look for today is not what we looked for 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It's a very different environment today.
Yeah. Well, and let me ask you this question. Since it's Women's in History Month, this is one of the reasons we asked you on the show. We've had successful women on every week this month. We had our first guest was Marianne Williamson, who's, you know, best-selling author who just declared her candidacy for president. Not sure how far that'll go, but she's a very successful woman. Then we had a woman on last week who calls herself a politics girl and started a little podcast from her kitchen, which now has 1.5 million viewers. And then we asked you because you're another very successful woman. And when I was in college, I did in my master's program, I did a research project on women in work. And back then, 40 years ago, 75% of all women were found in four professions. I mean, when I think back on this, it's hard to believe, but they were either secretaries, teachers, nurses, or domestic workers. Now we find women everywhere. You know, I'm an old guy, go to a lot of doctors. I think for every male doctor I see two female doctors. But what advice would you give to young women? Because women are still only making 77 cents on a dollar. And I don't get that. What can we do? You know, one thing that I always thought was a problem with the women's movement was they didn't speak to men as much as they spoke to women. Because if it were up to me, I'd be saying to men in the world, look, if your wife's making 77 cents on a dollar, your family's being cheated at a 33% of their income. But they never really did that. They fought it completely on the grounds that it's immoral. And it is immoral. But what can we do, you think? What advice would you have for young women?
Well, I certainly one of the things that and things that I did not know how to do when I was coming up, my first corporate job, is learn how to speak up for yourself and talk about the things that you're able to do. I was always taught, you don't brag. That was what my mother said to me. You don't brag. Right. People will see what you do, and so good things will happen just because they'll see you do good work. Well, that's not true. That doesn't work in the world. And you have to be able to brand yourself and be able to talk about yourself to the right people. And it has to be to the right people. Make sure that you're in the right situations that will yield benefits to you. You know, you talked about your first job. My first job was with what was then Atlantic Coastline Railroad. It's now Seaboard Coastline Railroad in Jacksonville, Florida. And I was recruited there right out of college. I was in college and they came over and I don't know how they got my name, but anyway, to come over and be in an administrative position. Well, I didn't know it at the time, but they used me to integrate the railroad. I was the first person of color that they hired that wasn't a porter or a maid in that whole headquarters down in Jacksonville.
Wow.
And people would come, and they everybody had to go through 3 months training before I got there to be able to know how to deal with me, if you can imagine, with this. I find this out later. And every day I had an office in the first floor all the way in the back. They hid me all the way in the back. But when people would come for their services, they would just come and stare at me at the window like I was the freak in the animal show. And wow. So it that was my first experience. I integrated Seaboard Post Line Railroad, and there must have been 600 people in that building. Nobody would have lunch with me. Nobody would even speak to me outside of the office, outside if I went out into the other part of the building. And so it was quite an experience that people won't have today. Now, the discrimination happens in other ways today, probably not like that. But and I recall not speaking up for myself. For instance, the union rep came to me and told me I had to join the union. That was required. And I didn't know that I had a choice. And so the advice I would give to young people is to do your research, do your homework, but also make sure you put yourself in places and positions and meetings and events that will benefit you. If there's somebody you want to get to meet, find out where they are, where they're going. Are they going to be at this event someplace, such that you can run into them and have a brief conversation, a meaningful conversation. And those are not lessons that I grew up knowing. I know now, but I'm a lot older today. But I would say young people that are career-minded, and young women in particular, because men seem to have that trait already. They were brought up differently. Women were not brought up, at least during my time, in that same way. And so you've got to learn to speak up for yourself. Be very positive all the time. You know, you don't go in with a negative approach and don't go in being abrasive, but you've got to be able to speak up for yourself and to lay out why you there, why that next job should be yours, why your credentials are the best thing since sliced bread. And that's the advice that I would give, the one thing I would give to young women coming up today.
Well, you know, I got to tell you that one of the most brilliant things I've heard of in a long time was that Jake Tapper, who's guy on CNN. Yeah, his daughter is a Girl Scout, and she came up with the idea of giving a merit badge to girls who stand up and ask a question in a public forum. If they do it twice, they get a merit badge. And I just thought that was so brilliant, because I've raised girls that are very outspoken, but yet they still somehow, through our culturization of women, they take a backseat to boys. And boys don't have a hard time bragging. Look, I fixed the bathroom sink the other day, and I've been walking around with a wrench in my hand for 2 days, so my wife doesn't forget it. You know, every time she says anything to me, I say, "Don't forget who fixed the bathroom sink." You know, I also have a friend who says, you know, when a woman goes to the doctor's and she gets out of the elevator and the office isn't there, she thinks to herself, "Gee, I got off on the wrong floor." But when a man does it, he thinks to himself, "Gee, the son of a bitch must have moved his office." We really don't. Men don't have any problem bragging. Men don't have any. I think that's wonderful advice, I certainly have seen that over and over again. Well, we're starting to run out of time, so let me ask you something. What do you see for 2024? Do you see? I think this is going to be some heavy lifting for the Democrats. Right now, it looks like Donald Trump may actually end up tearing the Republican Party apart. which I don't think is a healthy thing, by the way. I think, you know, even as a lifelong Democrat, I think you need a strong Republican Party as well as a strong Democratic Party. But what do you see for our city and for our nation in the next couple of years leading up to the next election? Any predictions of any sort?
Well, I'm obviously worried. I've just seen the culture wars and the hatred that I see is just unbelievable to me. How did we get here where we hate each other so much and we just want to destroy each other? I've been watching on Twitter the past couple of days since it's been forecasted that Trump is going to be indicted next week. And the vitriol that's coming out, particularly from the Republicans, it's just unbelievable, the hatred. Before they even know whether anything is going to happen or not, they are calling for war and another January 6th. And so I'm very worried about our country. I really am. And I'm worried about the Republicans that I see that are running for office. Nobody is willing to stand up and say this is not okay. And if you do stand up, then you are kind of put out of the party, like Liz Cheney was.
Right.
And so I don't know how do we get beyond that? And I don't know the answer to that, Michael. It is just troubling. I think that the Democrats are going to have a tough time in 2024. I think depends on who the nominee is on the Republican side. If it's Donald Trump, I think that Biden will be able to main if he's going to run, and I assume he is. I think Biden will be able to win that. If it's somebody else, I think that it will be a challenge. And I will tell you, Ron DeSantis scares me to death.
Me
because
too.
I think he's worse than Trump. He's smarter than Trump, and he's a lot more focused than Trump was. Trump was all over the place. He is far more dangerous for us than Donald Trump, quite frankly, if you can believe it. I can't believe I'm saying that, but I think he's far more dangerous.
Well, and you know, I think the most chilling thing I've heard a politician say in years is Donald Trump recently standing up and saying, "I am your retribution." That's his platform, right? I'm the way for you to get even, because that's what it's about. It's about getting even. It's not about moving America forward. It's not about helping your neighbor. It's about somehow getting even. And I think that's really, really, really chilling. And since
He has no vision for America, and siding with Putin, DeSantis siding with Putin. I it's just hard to believe that members of the Republican Party, who have always been so hawkish on foreign affairs, I'm worried about that. I'm worried about our. Our Democratic majority on the Senate side, because we only have a couple of votes now, and there are some folks that are in purple states that are in some danger, which is why you're going back to our crime bill. Why many of them could not face being branded as soft on crime. You know, go back to that. On the House side, I've not looked clearly at the House, but you know, Kevin McCarthy is doing such a horrible job till they may vote him out before the next election, because it only takes one vote, right? One person to stand up and say he's got to go. But so far, he's doing everything to appease them all, and you can't be a leader and do that.
Well, I know that you lived in Atlanta, and my first boss was Jimmy Carter, and I would love to go down. I'd love to go down to Georgia and say to those people that voted for Marjorie Taylor Greene, "What were you thinking?" I mean, oh my God, that we have people like that. But anyway, we're out of time. Barbara Lang, you're a fascinating guest. I now feel bad that we haven't had you on the show earlier because you really are very, very interesting. You have a lot of important things to say. I wish you continued success. I hope that we get to run into each other a few times now that the pandemic's over. And thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Well, my pleasure, Michael. It was great to talk to you, and it's been much too long. And all success to you, and you continue to do the good work you're doing.
All right. Well, thank you so much. We dedicate a song every year, every show, usually to our guests. But tonight, we're dedicating one from the Beatles to those guys on the Hill. Here's Fool on the Hill by the Beatles. Thank you so much, Barbara Lang, for being on the show. See you next week.
Day after day, alone on a hill, the man with the foolish grin is keeping perfectly still. But nobody wants to know him, they can see that he's just a fool, and he never gives an answer.
Representation in the capital of this nation. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote.